Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Complete Sports Media's podcast. I'm your host, Darren Campbell, and joining me on a Monday to do a great weekend wrap of sports, Jason Cameron, of course. Hey, buddy, good weekend. Were you able to get out and about and enjoy the beautiful weather?
Unfortunately, I was a little bit under the weather.
Oh.
So, I am getting over it now. I feel a lot better than what I did. So,
Oh, good.
it was weird, right? Because I'm like, it's nice and I'm sick. I don't know how that happened. And honestly, I don't even know where I caught it from because I hadn't really been out of the house that much, or at least around people. So
Right.
I don't know how that happened. I guess the grocery store
Oh, funny,
full of disease and sickness.
eh? Well, isn't that where you think you caught COVID?
Yeah, the one time, yeah, for
Yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because that was super disgusting, actually. Here's the story. Because I was in the grocery store and I was looking at this kid, like snotty nose. Typical, somebody should wipe the kid's boogers out of his face kind of kid.
Yeah.
And he sneezed on me. And I'm like,
Oh,
it's a lot of snot.
great. Oh,
It's a lot of snot.
shit.
And I'm like, I'm probably gonna get something from that. And I did. And I
Wow.
did.
Unreal. Wow. Yeah. Well, I've always said, man, you don't use your oven, so why go to the grocery store? I just,
That's
yeah,
true. That's
there's
true.
not, you burned yourself a few weeks ago and
And I
you
gave up right away after that.
know.
I was
Yeah.
just, all right.
Burn your hand, burn your counter. It's time to give up.
Throw in the towel
Yeah.
immediately. All right, we're cool. I tried,
Yeah.
failed.
Just get to know the Uber Eats guy and you got a few restaurants close by you. You should frequent them and you walk in the door, Jason, you'll get like
They're
norm
just
of
like normal
cheers.
here.
Yeah.
Yes. That's me.
Yeah.
It's me,
Yeah.
especially when
Oh man, we were up in Whistler for the weekend and talking about food. Holy crap, is it pricey up there, man? Wow. Everywhere you go, you got to drop like hundreds and hundreds of dollars. It's just insane how much they want for food. We finally found some, one or two reasonable places. Everything else is just so insane, unbelievable. But we had a hell of a weekend up there. We did our big adventure day. So they this company called the Adventure Group, they put on a day pass instead of just doing one adventure. They allow you to do all of them in a day. And so I signed up, got a couple passes, and we went there first thing in the morning. We started off with ATVing, which was super fun. Then we went zip lining, then we went river rafting, and then we did this aerial obstacle course, they call it. And then we went and did a really amazing thing at night. It was a walk through the forest that had lights, visual images, and music and sounds. Man, it was totally impressive, super amazing. And geez, I'm still hurting though. Holy cow. It was brutal on the body. Yeah, to do all those things in one day, it's fun, but it's definitely tiring. I'm gonna put a lot of stuff on the website for people to see, but yeah, I think maybe me getting a little long in the tooth, my body's not used to doing all that kind of stuff in one day, and I feel it still today. We did it Saturday, and it's still hurting a bit today.
So you're saying you overdid it because did you go like literally from 9 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock at night straight?
Yeah, we went I guess 9 to 4, and then we took a break. We went for dinner and hung out for a while and then came back. Our booking for the nighttime, it didn't start till 10:20. So
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
so that was the first available time to start because they wanted it 100% dark, and they wouldn't allow anybody to do it until 20 after 10. So we had a an afternoon to enjoy the village, and go for some drinks and some food and hang out a bit, and went and had a little nap back at the campsite, and then went and did that at nighttime. So, you know, luckily we did have that little break in the middle. I think I wanted to do a bit more, but there was so many people that they had everything booked for the rest of the afternoon after 4 o'clock. So it was probably smart. I wanted to do the ATVing again. It wasn't going to be too taxing on your body. And, you know, you get to go up these crazy hills with the ATVs. And it was pretty awesome. That part of it I loved.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, because ATVing is fun. I've done it before, like long time ago when I was, I think, in my early 20s. And it was a ton of fun. That's what I do remember. But I also remember that I didn't want to take too much of a steep raid, because if the ATV did this, you know, then it would be crushed. So I don't want to be crushed.
It was these kind of units. They're called Razors. They're not like what you normally think of as an ATV, because it's actually sort of like a dune buggy car. So it had a roll bar and everything in case it does flip or roll.
Then you're not crushed.
No, those are we would have been saved, I guess, probably from the roll bar. Yeah. I'll put some pictures up, take a look. The guide guy, he just had a regular ATV that you see. It's just a seat. Handlebars and four wheels. But this one was actually like a little car. I looked online to see if I'd like to buy one. I looked online and they were like $35,000-$45,000. So won't be buying it tomorrow, but maybe one day. But yeah, it was they were crazy expensive to buy.
Is because you're buying a car.
Yeah,
just buying another car. It's a dune buggy that you're only going to use during the summer. Yeah, that's a good
vibe. Yeah, I was thinking of you during the river rafting part, because we had the conversation about river rafting and how I almost fell out of the raft this last time. There was a few people that fell out of the rafts. I think there was four or five rafts going down at the same time, and a guy in a kayak, and a couple people got exited, got shot out of the boat. They gave us the whole spiel on how to do it. And so then they asked for a volunteer to jump in and then show how to get him back into the boat. So the guy sitting next to me said, sure, I'll do it. And he jumped in, and then our guide pulled him back into the raft and showed us if it happened. I came pretty close a couple times to getting thrown right out of it. And Larray, she got knocked down onto the bottom of the boat, and she couldn't get up, so we had to pull her up and throw her back onto the side of the raft. And there was a lot of times where I was bouncing into the middle and out on the side and having to grab onto the rope because we were going down some crazy rapids and just getting soaked. And I definitely guarantee you wouldn't have liked it. It was pretty nutty and pretty crazy in it. And it was one of those rivers at the time that's not that serious either. And they said it was a grade 2 and a grade 3. And it goes up to grade 6, I guess, is the toughest, the worst. But it seemed pretty rough at times and pretty crazy. We were getting tossed about a lot.
So at least the good thing is, like, once this was all done, your river rafting trip, where you did a head count, you go, wait, then you have to recount again and say, we're missing two people. Anybody see that one couple? Because that would be terrifying. And that's why I probably would never do it.
The guide we had was a little bit harsh. He was kind of mean. He was yelling at everyone all the time. I think I would have rather been in another boat with a different guy. This guy was reading us the riot act, giving us all the worst case scenarios, a lot of really like bad worst case scenarios. Like, okay, if you get knocked out and you're heading towards a tree, don't do this. If you're heading towards rocks, do this. If you're in the middle of the river and you stop, don't stand up because your foot will get stuck and then you'll get knocked down and you'll be stuck underwater. And don't do this, don't do that. And then he would go, He'd scream at us, and then he'd yell at us if we weren't in sync or we were doing something a little wrong. And he was pretty bad. He was pretty brutal on us. And I think I would have liked a little less militant of a guy.
You know what? You should have asked. It's like, so what if I get ejected out of the boat, right? And then I hit my head and I'm unconscious. Are you going to save me?
Yeah.
You know what you have to do? It's like, well, I have all these other people, so no, you're going to die.
Yeah, that's it. No. We lose one or two every trip, so you know, you'll probably be the one we lost that time.
Oh, no, there he is. There's the body. He came down finally. Okay, let's yeah. fish him out. Let's fish him out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was there was a lot of humor, but there was a lot of danger. So you know, you were laughing, but then you were like looking around like, oh, is it serious here? And oh shit. And you know, so you were a little bit nervous, but you were trying to have fun. And the way you had to sit in the boat, you had to jam your foot in this little covering thing, and then you had to try to jam your foot underneath the floater on the side, and then you had to sit your body sideways, and then you had to paddle front way. So my body was like, okay, no, I'm not supposed to bend that way. Oh shit, what are you doing here? Oh, and I constantly had to keep adjusting my body because my feet were pointed forwards, my body was pointed this way, and then my top half was pointed this way to paddle. And oh shit, man, I was in a lot of pain by the time we finished the paddle. I actually thought I was going to want to do it twice. And then once we hit the end, that was good enough. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. But that was all for me for today.
How long was the trip? Was it like a half hour, 40 minutes?
I'd say the rafting was like an hour. I'd say
an hour. Okay. Cause that's an hour of hard rafting. Like that would be actually quite tiring. So I could see why you would say, I'm good.
Yeah. I was actually surprised at how sore I got from the zip lining because the fastest one they said was about, they said the fastest somebody went down, it was 120 kilometers an hour. And they said, but that person put on Vaseline and a sleek suit so they could go as quick as they could set a record or something. But I think she said like 80 to 100 kilometers an hour we were going on the first one. And when you hit the bottom, it's like a pretty long shock absorber, but it doesn't really absorb the shock. Like I could feel it in my body, like hitting, almost like hitting a brick wall. It was unbelievable. So that first one, I was like, okay, Jesus, is that how it's going to be every time? And luckily, they got a little bit slower and a little bit smaller as you went down the mountain, you know?
Yeah.
I think the third one felt the fastest, but it was the shortest. So maybe you weren't like as up to speed as the long one, which was, I think they said it was the longest one up until recently, and then somebody else tried to like beat them by a few meters, and they called it Sasquatch or something. But this one was unbelievable. You went from like the top of one mountain across the valley to the top of this other mountain, and it was friggin' crazy, man. It was amazing. Wow. Yeah, I was pretty shocked at how fast and how long that first one was, and then the third one. It felt faster than any of them, but it was a bit shorter. So it felt like I didn't hit the thing as crazy, but man, I still felt a big shock in my body, right through my whole body.
Yeah. I could imagine because like, if you're going that fast, then all of a sudden as you're coming to the end, it's like, this is going to be a sudden stop. Like you'd feel that throughout your whole skeletal structure, like your skeleton, your bones and your body ache.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. The obstacle course, pretty much hated it, did not enjoy it at all. It was way too strenuous and brutal. It was not fun. I was like, why do people do this one? This one, it doesn't have any joy to it at all. It just seems like too much work for fun. Why would you want to work this hard for fun? No, So we did a small course, and then they said, "Oh, you can do this one and that one." And then we're like, "No, nah, we're done. Forget this. This isn't not what we were wanting to do." It was pretty tough, man. It was pretty tough. It was way more strenuous than I wanted to do at that time of day, and it was the end of the day, really.
Okay, so in an obstacle course, like, what are you doing? Like, are you going under barbed wire in the mud or something like that? Like, is that what you're doing?
No, not like that tough mud or anything like that. No, this was like aerial. You're off the ground, way high up in the treetops, and you're going from platform to platform, and you're going on different types of obstacles. It could be like a rope net. It could be like a cable. And you have to sort of go between monkey bars. There was these ones that were hanging. There was logs hanging by two ropes, and you had to just put your feet onto one log and then jump onto another log that was just hanging by two ropes. And then you had to get, you know, maybe there was maybe 20 of them, and you had to just keep trying to get to the next one and the next one. And
then
there was another one that was just three ropes, so you had to hang by ropes and shimmy your way along. And then they had a little platform, and then more ropes that you sort of had to hang on to and get past, and cut little short zip lines and stuff. But oh man, it was brutal. It was really hard and very tough. Very tough.
It sounds like a ton of fun. I'm surprised that you just didn't do that one more.
So anyway, as I said many times, I'm going to put lots of stuff on the website. We've thrown a bunch of pictures up there now, but we're going to want to put a lot of review and things that we suggest. And they just tried this one week where you can get a day pass. This particular week, I think it's ended already, but they plan to do it again, they said. And, you know, I'd recommend it to most people. It was a really, really fun day. It's just, yeah, you just have to realize that your body's probably going to be sore for a day or two. But yeah, it was amazing. It was very fun. Very cool people up there. A guy that I know recently just bought the whole group. So, you know, I plan to give him a call and tell him, you know, that was a smart move, because it's a great, really nice setup. And everybody was amazing. Everybody treated us incredible. And you know, we really, really got our money's worth that day for sure.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear. And it's just another thing to do when you go up to Whistler. Like, it's just, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. It was really fun. So let's get on to the weekend in sports. Why don't we start today with the trade that happened in the NBA? We'll just quickly talk about that, and then we'll get into some UFC talk, and we'll talk some NBA later. But what did you think about the trade today? Utah got John Collins from the Atlanta Hawks for Rudy Gay in a second round pick. I was surprised that this move was made. Seems like Utah has a lot of big guys in the front court, but what do you think?
Again, it seemed like they wanted to dump salary, they wanted to clear cap space because of all the potential stuff that's coming forward now with the new CBA. True. Because I don't know, to me, shouldn't they have been able to get more from John Collins than just that? Yeah. Like, if you really think about it, right? Like, it's I thought his market was a lot higher than just getting Rudy Gay in the second round pick. So to me, that means they're just dumping salary.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. I think it was so they could get this trade exception. I think it's $25.6 million now they have to, you know, make some signs, you know, get some cap room. And, you know, so it was mostly, I think, to dump the salary and figure it out. I'm surprised because, you know, Atlanta made the Eastern Conference Final a couple of years ago. He was a big part of it. You know, obviously they flamed out this year and I guess wanted to make some changes. But, yeah, for Rudy Gay in a second-round pick, it's definitely a one-sided deal. But With this new CBA and the way the cap is starting to squeeze teams, I think a lot of times, you know, having this cap flexibility and room there is super important to teams, so they can fill out the roster with, you know, other players and, you know, try to see exactly what they need and go forward.
Exactly, right? Like, it's like they need a little bit of flexibility to add, like, some veterans and stuff, or to fill some holes and some needs of what they need in their roster deficiencies, right?
Yeah.
And then that's why you got to move that money, get it out of there so you can do all those things. And I believe that's why Collins got moved, so they can do all those things they need to.
I think the biggest deal that happened this past week was the Jordan Poole for Chris Paul deal. And after you thought about it for a few days, what were your thoughts on this move?
I think the move was kind of made because they wanted to limit the blow of Steph Curry not being on the floor. Because when Steph Curry's on the floor, like their efficiency and how much he brings to the table is just through the roof. But once he goes to the bench, then all of a sudden it's just like, ah, man, now we can't do it. Like, literally, that's kind of what it translates to. And sure. I think bringing in Chris Paul will lessen that blow once he's not there. Because then he can be a part of, like, the second team and run that and run it well. So – but the other thing is, though, too, is I think that I heard it off somewhere else that Chris Paul is one of those players that runs the most pick and roll, and the Golden State Warriors run the least in the league.
Wow.
So he's going to have to kind of morph his game a little bit more to what Golden State does. But I'm pretty sure that if he's going to take control of the second team, they're going to run probably more pick and roll for him so that he can just at least be comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. One thing I want to add is that I think the Warriors have been having some difficulty bringing that succession plan into reality. And we saw it in the playoffs. It seemed like, you mentioned once Steph's off the court, they just seem to drop off in offensive efficiency and having a lot of difficulties. I think Paul's brought in also to try to mentor a lot of these young guys. I think, you know, Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, guys like this, I think will start to flourish with a guy that's got 19 years in the NBA. And, you know, he's one of the greatest point guards to ever set foot in the association. And I think if he is a very big piece of that second unit, I think that's going to really help them grow and, you know, be able to be those guys to take over once Steph and Clay and Draymond and the core pieces are moving on or long in the tooth and not able to produce like they were.
Yeah. And you know what? He's very capable of doing that, doing the mentorship, because he did it in OKC. He did it in OKC, and I think he did it really well. And I think he left those guys when he left. I think he left them in a better place. Because if there's one thing about Chris Paul, this will be the one question mark now, but every team he's gone to, they have gotten better.
Yeah.
Every team. Right. So the question is now, okay, so this is Golden State, though, and he's now a little bit more longer in the tooth. Can he still improve them, even at his advanced age in his career? I hope he can, because that's a pretty cool streak that he's got going on.
Very incredible, yeah. Amazing. He sounds happy. He said, you know, he's a bit shell-shocked to, you know, just – be passed around and tossed to a couple of organizations this offseason, and not sure how he initially thought, but he said he's admired Golden State from afar and how great this organization has been and how and you know how important winning was and creating a winning culture. And he said he's really excited to immerse himself into that. He said his whole mindset and mind process over the past dozen years has been, how do we beat Golden State? And that's all I care about. And that's, you know, the main focus of his life. So now suddenly, you know, being on the same side with them, he said it's going to be amazing. And he said, really looking forward to playing with guys like Steph and Draymond and Clay and And he mentioned a lot of the team and said, you know, this is an example organization that I've always really, really wanted to be a part of. And so, you know, he's, he's there. I was quite shocked. Jordan Poole really, you know, I know a lot of people are focusing in on the Draymond Jordan Poole fight and one of the reasons why they moved on. But I think Jordan Poole sort of lost his position with the Warriors when he had such a horrible playoffs and he just didn't contribute at all. He just didn't seem like he knew how to play and just seemed to work himself right off the roster. And they had just signed him to a 4-year, $128 million deal. You don't want to see a guy fold that badly after committing that much money and term to a guy.
Yeah. And also too, you have to remember that the year before, he had an incredible playoff run.
Yeah.
And he was very, very good. And usually for like players that young, that usually doesn't happen. So you could actually say that that could possibly be an anomaly because we just saw it with Michael Porter Jr. where he did not play very well. But he's a young player. So it's going to take him time to get to that level. That's usually the norm of what you see. But luckily, the Nuggets are awesome, so it didn't matter. But now for Jordan Poole, I think personally now he's probably going to be in a better place for his own self-development because with the Wizards, take as many shots as you want. Actually, just do whatever you want. You're not going to be very good, so just work on your game and get better. And I think that's probably where he needs to be.
Yeah, well, he'll be looks like he'll be one of the key pieces there. Kyle Kuzma has asked to leave as well, and so – you know, they're definitely rebuilding. Do you think this trade makes it more likely or less likely that Draymond comes back?
More likely. Okay. Well, yeah, obviously more likely because, okay, so let's say this. If the organization's looking at Jordan Poole and Draymond and they're trying to weigh who has more worth here within this, first off, it's always going to be Draymond because you have two of your most important pieces, Clay and Steph, saying, well, we need that guy. He's the third, right? Yeah. He's the third part of this dynasty that needs to be there. So, yes, he would be the glue. So yeah. You would want to take him back. And, yes, over all that stuff that happened with Jordan Poole and Draymond and the tape being leaked, yada, yada, yada. Like, so I don't think they were ever good after that. Like, say what you want, but I think it was even shown by Jordan Poole, like, what he did. Because apparently, if you cut a man off of IG, off of Instagram, that says everything about how your relationship is with said person. If you cut him off, it's like, I'm not following that guy anymore. It's like, told you. I knew he wasn't good with it. Cut him off of Instagram. And that's usually what we jump to. But I don't think they were ever good. Because think about this. If I were to strike you and damn near almost knock you out with a punch because of some nonsense that happened on a basketball court, I don't think you'd be good with me for a while.
Yeah.
Not for a long time, right? And that's exactly what happened. So, and I don't blame Jordan Poole for not being good with Draymond like that. I don't blame anybody.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It seemed to be okay partway through the season, but it just seemed to rear his ugly head a little bit in the playoffs. And there was nothing the Warriors could do but try to take side and make a move. And Draymond's the guy. Hopefully he decides to sign back. I know there's a lot of suitors. I sent you the Instagram post that had him and LeBron hanging out. I think they were in France or something like that. They were just chilling on holidays together. So that immediately put up a lot of, he's going to the Lakers now, talk. But, I think they've been buddies for a while, so it shouldn't have started all these rumors.
No, I don't see how the Lakers could afford him, right? Because, like, Draymond's looking at it like a contract that's going to pay him, like, $30 million or more. Slightly more, right? I don't think the Lakers have that in them because, like, they would have to trade away important pieces that they busted their ass to get. Right. So, why would they do that? Because, as far as I'm concerned, they got a great team. They just got beaten by a better team.
Yeah.
You know, like anybody else that the Lakers come up against in the Western Conference Finals, if it's not the Nuggets, that's going to be a great series. It's just unfortunate that they came up against the Nuggets and they got swept.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I just purchased Chris Paul's new book today. I'm supposed to get it through Amazon. It's coming. It's called 61. It's 61 life lessons passed down to him from his grandfather. Looking forward to reading that. I finished the Kenny Smith book when I was up in Whistler. One of the best reads I've had in a long time, and I definitely recommend it. I'll lend it to you if you feel like taking a chance and reading it. It was great, and I'm looking forward to reading Chris Paul's book. I wish it would have been written just after this deal, and he could have given all his real opinions on it all. But yeah, maybe his next book. But anyway, I'm excited for that. This is a big historic day. It's the 20th anniversary of the 2003 NBA draft. LeBron, Carmelo, D-Wade, Chris Bosh, one of the best draft classes in the history of the league. They talked a lot to a lot of guys today. A lot of media outlets were talking to the guys and getting some memories of that draft 20 years ago. 27 players from that draft ended up playing 10 or more years in the league. 26 NBA titles came out of 15 different players in that draft. A lot of people talked about the Michael Jordan draft, the 96 draft with Vince Carter and you know, a bunch of those guys. But 20th anniversary, pretty cool, pretty great memory. I remember just thinking how stacked it was, and all the great talent that was entering the NBA out of that class.
Yeah, because that was that draft class, because I think they likened it to the 96 one. Now, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong, because I thought the 96 one was the one with Allen Iverson, Ray Allen, Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant. It was pretty awesome.
Incredible. Awesome. Yes.
And
that was one of the greatest drafts of all time. And a lot of people say that was the greatest draft of all time.
Yeah. And 2003 was no slouch. It was like any draft is compared to one of the greatest drafts of all time. That's a pretty good draft.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. No, it, yeah. So, pretty amazing that it's 20 years. So LeBron's still playing. I think everybody else gone. Maybe.
I think so.
He might be the last of that draft class happening. And NBA free agent this Friday, which will be exciting. Lots to talk about. We'll try to fit in a little bit of NBA talk at the end. Also free agent frenzy starting on Saturday in the NHL, which is also Canada Day, kind of fitting. There'll be tons of moves there. Lots and lots and lots of deals happening. There was even a couple trades made today. So lots happening in the NHL and the NBA off season, but we are a couple of days removed from another really good UFC card. Let's break that down. I enjoyed a lot of it. There was a card from Jacksonville, Florida. Jacksonville is sort of known for being that, hey, we don't have COVID here. Come on, UFC. Put on events anytime you want. They were the first city to allow the UFC to come back and perform in front of full crowds. We had some pretty epic cards there. And I think because they did that, Dana White is now saying that they get a card every year. And he brought them this card this past weekend. It was an early card for a lot of people. So not a massive amount of viewership, but there was some interesting things that happened. We had a featherweight battle between Josh Emmett and Ilya Topuria, number 9 against number 5. And going in, we did a little preview, and I said, I just don't see Emmett doing anything against Topuria. I just can't see a route for him to be able to beat this guy. And man, I was damn right. This was one of those beatdowns that is historic. Topuria was able to just dominate all five rounds. Emmett is tough as nails, and I can't believe he was able to survive this onslaught. But we saw some crazy, crazy, crazy scorecards. 50-42. Don't remember ever seeing a 50-42, a 50-44, and a 49-45. There was one judge gave a 10-7 in the third round. It's the only the fourth time in UFC history there was a 10-7 round. And all three judges were scoring the fourth round 10-8. So, yeah, crazy. I thought Topuria was so much better, but I did not think he would dominate this incredibly badly over five full rounds.
Do you remember when Topuria was looked at in the same light as Patty Pimblett? Because now I thought of that when I'm watching this fight, and I'm like, that seems super ridiculous right now. Like, this is super ridiculous. Like, this guy is so good.
Wow.
Emmett was almost had a chance to fight for the title, right?
Yeah. Well, he fought for the interim belt against Yair just last time. So, you know, he would have been holding this belt, and he would have been, you know, facing Volkanovski, you know, in this next fight. But he did fight for the interim belt just a few months back.
Yeah, he just fought, and he got absolutely destroyed. He got smacked down by like a far superior fighter. Wow. Like, just far superior fighter, especially when it comes to when it came to the realm of everything. There was nothing that Emmett was better than Topuria at. Nothing. And he demonstrated it for five rounds. The only thing that Emmett just actually displayed, he was able to display, was extreme will and toughness.
Yeah.
The man never quit on himself. And Topuria was probably like, I guess I'm not getting this guy out of here. So I'll just keep beating him up.
Yeah,
and that's all he could do. Yeah. I was impressed.
Yeah, it was super impressive, and you know, I knew Topuria was good, but he entered even more elite company in my mind and a lot of people's minds. I think he just made people realize that he is a contender for the title. I don't know if he gets an immediate title shot. There is the fight between Volkanovski and Yair is coming up. Very soon, but I think they're talking about Max Holloway as a potential guy that he should face next to get that be that top contender. Whoever comes out of that gets to face off. If the Volkanovski Yair Rodriguez goes one way with if Volk wins, I think either Holloway or Topuria has that next shot. If Yair wins, I think they have to have a rematch. Volkanovski and Yair probably. So that ties it up a little bit. I guess it's, Topuria is young. He's, 26 years old. So
super
he's got tons of time to wait. He, really can wait. I would love to see him fight Max Holloway. He said he'd be game to fight Max Holloway if it was in Spain. The UFC's never been to Spain. Topuria is a Georgian fighter that grew up in Spain. And, that's his home country now. And it would be probably pretty awesome if the UFC was able to secure a date there and go to Spain for the first time. I'm sure they could, find a few other Spanish fighters. I think because it's so close in Europe to so many countries, I think they could sell out a soccer stadium there. And it would be a big event. And it would be pretty awesome to see Holloway and Topuria.
That's a great suggestion on Topuria's part. Like, because at the end of the day, the UFC is trying to be a global sport, right? So eventually you're going to have to go to that country at some point in time.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. I think I love that call out. And then the other thing I was going to say is, I don't know if he's still injured, but I would say either Topuria has to fight somebody in the top five. So Holloway or Ortega. That's what I would say.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, he definitely demonstrated just an absolute amazing ability. He's still undefeated, and he's a guy that I think will fight for a title very soon. Probably within the next two fights. I think he's a champion in waiting. You know, we'll see who emerges, you know, as the champion in the next, you know, few fights in the next few months here. You know, facing Volkanovski, that's a different beast. That's a guy that's, you know, one of the greatest guys pound for pound in the sport right now. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see that. But I think, you know, to go from 9 to a title shot after one victory, I think it's a bit much of a step up that the UFC doesn't usually do. So, you know, I could see him having one more fight before a title shot.
Yeah, I definitely see that. Like, I think his route to a title shot, he has to fight somebody in the top 5 first. And then he gets his shot. Like, as long as he wins that fight, then he gets his shot. But there's no guarantee, man. Like, if he has to fight either Holloway or Ortega or somebody like that, first off, it's going to be one hell of a fight. Yeah. I can't wait to see what that looks like. And because the featherweight division is just awesome. Packed with awesome fighters, man. Amazing. Super stacked. So whatever fight that they put together, I can't wait to see.
Yeah. Josh Emmett, for his toughness, did get an extra $50,000. This was called Fight of the Night. Pretty amazing. Topuria really won that $100,000 and probably should have got both. But you know, Emmett gets $50,000 for getting beat down and showing his toughness and grinding out. Topuria said, I thought I was going to take this guy out in the first round. He's tougher than anybody I've ever faced. That was impressive. You know, I'm way better than him, but, you know, I was shocked that he lasted 5 rounds. And they almost stopped it after 4. His eye pretty much closed, and the doctor came in to look at it and gave him a shot. But this was Topuria's right from the beginning. You know, this put him into the top 5 and really puts him into that upper echelon now in that featherweight division. The co-main event, I wasn't super excited about it, but it turned out to be a really good fight. These two girls were also super tough, bloody noses, just hitting each other a lot throughout this fight, both showing skill and will. And it turned out to be a very entertaining co-main event that I wasn't expecting.
I will say this. They earned their co-main event headline through this fight. They earned that because they came out on fire. Complete fire. I liked how Barber had close elbows in the clinch. She was able to throw those elbows in the clinch. Rebus was great at trying to maintain distance and get her strikes off. But I think at the end of the day, because this was a close fight, man, it was super close. I thought Barber's wrestling was better, slightly right. ahead. And obviously, what changed the dynamic of the fight was when she landed that head kick on Rebus in the second round and then cracked her with some huge combos and got the finish. But it was that timely head kick that she landed on Rebus. That's what changed the whole dynamic of the fight.
Yeah, I saw her setting it up quite a bit through the fight. And then once she finally landed that, she was just able to land some very good bombs to drop her. And then Keith Drunken Peterson came in and stopped it. we had a win. No nonsense. Yeah.
Now here's the funny thing. Like after all that stuff that that Cruz said about Peterson, Cruz is on like literally the next show with Peterson, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if they had a talk, but he didn't say nothing about him this time.
No.
He didn't say nothing. I don't know if he had a talk with Peterson. I don't know if ESPN had a talk with Cruz saying, you can't wantonly just accuse people of being drunk. You just get that without proof, you know? Maybe cut that out.
Yeah. I looked into it a little bit more, and I guess Cruz was really mad at Peterson when he was a referee for the Henry Cejudo fight. He thought Henry's or Peterson jumped in and stopped the fight way too soon. And so he had a little bit of a axe to grind with him ever since. And so I guess Peterson got a little wind of some of the bad comments that Cruz was making after he made that mistake last week. He put a picture up of Dominic Cruz after the fight and said, "Do you think this guy deserved to be stopped?" And Cruz was all beat up, swollen, and he looked like he had been beat up pretty bad. So it's like, "Would you have stopped this guy, in a fight? Look at his face." And so, gave it back to him a little bit.
Okay, that, you know what? I'm all right with that. I'm all right with that, yeah, man, because if you're going to call me out and you're going to say stuff like about me that's not true, then I'm just going to give you some facts, because that's all you did. I'll hit you with real facts. That's a fact. It's what happened. So there you go.
Yeah, that's where, you know, it can get into some dicey, sticky situations. I think most of the time, the commentators should be guys that are retired, that aren't in the game anymore, because you know, there can be some serious bias, not only for against the referee, for the referee, judges, as well as the fighters. You know, you could have had a beef with a guy, you could have had one of your teammates have a beef with a guy, you can slander a guy, and you know, how is the guy going to defend himself? He doesn't have the microphone in front of him, you know, and he might not even hear it until he's home that night, you know, and suddenly he has to try to defend something that a guy that has an axe to grind saying about you while you're fighting, or, you know, the judges or the referees. I mean, they're just a lot of sticky situations. We mentioned the Dan Hardy one, and Dan Hardy lost his job over getting into a fight with Herb Dean. There's going to be, you know, some potential for some more trouble brewing between the announcers and the people that are in there actually, you know, in combat and judging and refereeing at the same time.
Yeah, of course, there's a potential for that, and especially like if you're part of a huge fight camp, then you're gonna biasly go for all your guys.
Yeah.
You're going to go for all your guys, right? Yeah. And that's even happened a couple of times with Daniel Cormier. But at least the good thing with Cormier is it's like he'll say it right off the bat. I'm biased. And here's why. Right? And I think it's okay at times to do it like that, but you can't do that all the time.
No.
Not all the time. No. Then that's not good.
Speaking of Dan Hardy, he's the main color announcer for PFL now, and the PFL had a really great card this past weekend. I watched. I want to mention some PFL stuff, but Hardy's in there. He didn't, you know, he's not out of the industry. Luckily, he was able to get picked up by probably the second best organization right now in MMA. So, he lost his job at the UFC, but he has surfaced there. Okay, let's talk about the Austin Lane Justin Toffa fight just briefly. Obviously, really, really lousy that an eye poke that was one of the worst eye pokes I remember
I've ever seen
ended this contest so early. I was really looking forward to seeing these two guys battle, but that was like half of his finger through his eyeball, immediately swelled up. Almost to the point you couldn't see. I don't know where the blood was coming from, but he was bleeding too. And this was really unfortunate so quickly into the fight.
29 seconds into the fight. And then when you saw the instant replay, it was really, really bad. Like to the point where I thought, I'm like, that dude could lose his eye from that one.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I thought. And then the blood was coming out of his eye. Like there was no cuts around his eye. It was coming out of his eye. I think there should be a rule made by the UFC that if it's that bad and the blood is not coming from, clearly not from around here, but inside the eye, fight's over.
Media.
There's no more need to talk about it, man. The fight is over, because now it's cool to be tough, right? But is it cool to be tough and then to be blind in one eye? Like, is that cool as well? Like, that, it's not cool. So I would say that sometimes you need to protect the fighter from himself. And if something like that happens where the potential for the fighter to lose vision in his eye, the fight's over. Because you know what? It's not worth it. It's not worth it. Whatever money he was going to make is not worth it.
Just no, not at all. Like, you're right. They, you know, they definitely should have just stopped it right away. Get him to the hospital as quick as possible. You know, you want to tend to something like that serious right away. If something's, if it's bleeding and it's swelling up that bad, there's some massive damage. And yes, you're right. You know, losing, to lose your, you know, sight over this, you know, they got to jump on it and, you know, attend to it right away. Not just, oh, give them 5 minutes and, you know, we'll figure it out and stuff. Yeah.
Can you open your eye? It's like, no, somebody just jammed their finger in my eye. So yeah, I can't really open it up at this point in time. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought the whole thing was kind of ridiculous because I'm like, what are we actually really doing here? So you want the guy that can't see out of his freaking eye to go fight? That's bleeding out of his eye. Like, the blood is streaming out of his eye. Like, for me, it was pretty much a no-brainer. Fight's over. Get the guy to the hospital, man. It's done.
One of the best trainers in MMA is Mike Winklejohn, and he lost sight in his eye during training with a fighter. And he's blind in one eye. Will never be able to see again. It happens. I've seen it happen I've seen it happen in many, you know, areas. I've seen it happen in other sports. And, you know, that's something that, you know, you don't want to have, because that'll end the guy's career right then and there. And the other thing I wanted to mention was Austin Lane. Great to see him getting an opportunity after having a brief NFL career. He was a draft pick from the Jacksonville Jaguars, ended up sticking around Jacksonville. Ended up playing for a few teams, getting in, getting opportunities with teams, but never sticking too long. Finally transitioning and getting an opportunity. Third really prominent NFL player that has made the transition to MMA, and I hope he gets an opportunity to fight soon and show what he's got. I think career trajectory is just on the way up for this guy, and I look forward to seeing him in a lot of battles.
Yeah, I think he has greater potential than that other dude that was in there in the UFC, Greg Hardy.
Yeah,
he seems like he's a tad better than that dude. And so I look forward to him on what he can do next. But again, you know, like I think that refs need to be more on these fighters about displaying of the fingers. Like if you're gonna do like a rangefinder. It's like sometimes they have the fingers up. Use a fist. Yeah. Use a fist.
Yeah. Yeah, Greg Hardy was drafted in the same draft as Austin Lane. And they both had shorter NFL careers. The highest draft pick ever for an NFL player to make the UFC, Marcus Jones. He was the 22nd pick of Tampa Bay in 96. These two guys were drafted in 2010. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And, fingers crossed that Justin Taffa recovers really soon and there's no long-term serious damage for him. Okay, the featherweight battle between David Onama and Gabriel Santos. David Onama gets the really nice knockout victory. Gets 50K also for one of the performances of the night. He had just such amazing technical striking that he just ended up wearing down Santos, was able to really wear him down, just continuously hitting him combo after combo. And just finally, Santos was just a little bit wobbly on his feet. And then he just landed a couple kill shots, landed that one shot, was dropping him and landed a second shot as he was going down, and was able to get the victory here. It was a very good performance from Onama.
Oh, it was an excellent performance, because if you remember in the first round, Santos almost had him out of there with that armbar.
Yeah.
Ooh, date. I was impressed, and he was like a dog on a bone. Like, he almost had it the one time. He almost had it the second time.
Yeah.
And then almost had him the third time, and he still managed to battle out of it. I thought, personally, going into round two, I thought Santos had the edge because I think he was confusing Onama with the stance switches and then striking from either way. So I thought Santos looked great up until he didn't. And then when Onama hit him with that short uppercut and shut his lights out and then caught him on the way down, I think, with a right hook, which was kind of unneeded. It was unneeded. He was already out. But great win by Onama. And that uppercut, you can tell the man has power. Because he shut his lights out with that shot. Shut him down.
What did you think of the ode to Adesanya as he was shooting arrows into him, another African fighter that finishes off arrow after arrow after arrow into Santos's lifeless body?
Yes, I don't know where they're getting that from, like from Hawkeye or something like that, but I was impressed because Onama really wanted to finish him off because he kept going. I think he must have put 10 arrows into his body.
Yeah, it just was on and on and on for sure. Impressive win for Onama. And as I said, gets one of the performances of the night, 50K there. Okay, the fight that kicked off the main card had Brendan Allen against Bruno Silva. Brendan Allen really weathered the storm early in this one, was able to finally land some really good shots. He hit Silva with a shot to the temple, a second to the jaw, dropped him, ground and pound, got the stoppage, landed some very heavy shots, but Silva was had him in a bit of trouble early on. This was quite the firefight to begin with, but Allen just kept at it until he got him down and Mark Goddard pulled him off.
Yeah, I was impressed because of the fact that Allen wasn't afraid of Silva's power coming back at him, because he was very confident in the power that he was throwing at Silva, clearly, because he was able to knock him down. And then Allen is one of the best, because he got the rear naked choke finish. He's one of the best at securing that rear naked choke quickly. Yeah. Because what he does is he usually doesn't get his legs involved. The legs will get you, will give you the tell that he's, okay, so he's setting me up. He's got his hooks in. He's going to go for the rear naked. So most of the time, Allen will go for the choke first. And then if he needs his legs, he'll put them in. But usually he doesn't because he's got one hell of a squeeze. And so when he got that in, and then you're like, all right, well, Silva, you should tap or he's going to go unconscious. And then he taps. So, yeah. Good win.
Yeah.
Good win by Allen.
His rear naked choke is super impressive. And it's to a point where it's behind the head where the hands are just, they're not accessible. And the guy's grabbing and trying to pull a hand. And he's like, okay, I got a tap. I'm toast here. Yeah. And yeah, he sunk it in so fast. I couldn't believe how quick he went from grounded pound, get the back, sink in the choke. Like it just was just this so fast of a transition. You're right. You're not prepared. You're not ready for it. It sunk in. This fight's over.
Yeah, like he is very quick with that transition. And this was a dangerous fight for Allen because he's a ranked fighter. And he gave an opportunity. I call that he's given an opportunity to Silva, see if he can take his like number from him. He could not. No. And that was a great win by Allen, man. Great win. He's an up and comer.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with him. And number 13 going in. Definitely should be moving up and getting great opportunities. He called out Jared Cannonier and Dricus Duplessis, maybe a little higher ranked than he did. Gerald Meerschaerts in his corner, who's a super tough guy. And he made a lot of statements. He said, I'm the youngest in the top 15. I really want a card in Louisiana. I guess that's originally his hometown. And he said, I'm coming for the belt. I'm going to have it. I want Izzy in 2024. I'm going to be the champion. So does not lack confidence at all. The featured prelim was one of the weirdest things I ever experienced because this was like watching twins fight. I've never actually seen twins fight in the MMA against each other. There have been some twins in the UFC, but never seen them fight each other. I kept looking and trying to, oh yeah, oh that's Magny, oh that's Rogue. Oh, I had to keep looking at their short color and look underneath their names, because these are two of the most identical human beings that you're going to be able to ever get fighting each other. And this was just one of those crazy grinded out battles that Magny just slightly was a little bit better than Rowan this one.
Yeah, like his grappling along the fence, I thought was what won him the fight. Because, like, and also too, like, Magny's got an incredible motor. He's got an incredible motor, and he always uses that to his advantage in these fights. And also, like, Rowan and Magny, they have this certain body type that you just don't see in that particular weight division. I think they're both 6'3" or 6'4" at 170, right?
Yeah.
So that in itself is odd. So, and then with what they were trying to do to each other, it's almost as if their skill set negated everything that the other guy was trying to do. And then that's why it kind of developed into what we saw, which was not a very exciting fight, by the way. It was a grinder. It was a grind out fight. A lot of grappling, a lot of positioning, a lot of like short shots in between the clinch and stuff like that. And that is Magny's world. Ro needs more distance to do what he needs to do and to do it effectively. But Magny loves that. That's how he wins his fights.
Yeah, impressed with Magny, always the Haitian sensation. Setting some records as well. Increased his record, 21st UFC win. That's the most in the welterweight history. He now has the most significant strikes past Kamaru Usman for the most. He also tied Matt Brown with the most fights in the division's history. So many amazing battles. 21-9 in his UFC career. A guy that's been around so long and just knows how to grind out these types of wins. And Phil Rowe, same kind of guy. I think Phil Rowe is going to be Neil Magny when Neil Magny's gone. I think we're going to see a really long career for Phil Rowe. And he learned from the master. Just follow what Magny's done and you're going to have an incredible long career, I think, for Phil Rowe.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely agree with everything that you just said. Like, if he follows that template that Magny's already done, I think, yeah, Rowe's going to have an incredibly good, long career.
The Randy Brown-Wellington Turman fight kind of went the way I was expecting. I felt a bit sorry for Turman. He drops down in weight to try to face some different types of competition, and the matchmakers give him exactly what he was facing one weight class up. Not very fair, not very cool. Randy Brown has, is so lanky, so long, has such a reach advantage, utilized it so smartly in so many ways, and really, got some late takedowns in those first two rounds to secure the first two rounds on the judges' scorecards, and pretty much won him the fight right then and there.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, because the thing, Turman couldn't really utilize his wrestlings to get Brown down to the mat because of his absurd length. Yep. It's like, so if you try to lift him, you're not lifting him off the ground because his feet are still touching the ground. It's like, nah, man, he's still grounded.
Yeah.
Good try, though. And I think Turman was trying to fight that the entire fight. So then it forced him to fight Brown's fight, which was a stand-up battle. Turman had some great calf kicks, but in the end, Brown's length is a real problem. It's a real problem for anybody. He can keep you on the end of that jab and just do whatever he wants to do and use his kicks too to his advantage as well. So great win by Brown, though. Great win by Brown.
Yeah, I love Rude Boy and I cheer for him. You got the Jamaican connection. I always want to see the Jamaicans do well, and really good, very good win. And Turman. He's got to go to the UFC matchmakers and say, okay, can you get me a guy that's a little more normal size? This was kind of, I'm fighting the same guys. That's why it went down. Like, give me a break. This is very nice of you, but we'll see who he faces next. I think he'll have an opportunity against a, a little more normal body type size for that division, the welterweight division. This lightweight battle between the Polish fighter and the Tajikistan fighter, both of them terrible names. I hate these names with all these vowels. They said, I think they call him Robechki.
I think Robechki. It was.
Okay, Robechki. Yeah. This guy utilized incredibly brutal leg kicks to give him the advantage. Take down this Tajikistan fighter to where he was just a sitting duck up against the cage, and he was just going to either finish him with leg kicks or finally smashed him down with a big, big left and finished it off. But this was not going to last much longer, no matter what. Those leg kicks had really just completely taken his whole base and foundation away from him. And he, as I said, sitting duck against the cage, just waiting for something to finish him off.
And it was the inside leg kick that he kept hitting him over and over again to his Radzabov's lead left leg. So that lead left leg was completely chewed up. And then so when he tried to switch stance, he started chewing up the other leg. So I'm like, all right, so eventually he won't actually be able to stand. That's when the fight will be called. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to wait until he can't get up anymore. And then that's it. And you're right. He was literally a sitting duck up against the fence, having the fence hold him up as he's just like taking shots. And he's just like, oh, wow, this sucks. It would suck for Radzabov because he clearly didn't have the right technique to check those inside leg kicks. No. Because if he had checked a couple of those, he would have gotten a lot less. But since he didn't know how to do that and his legs clearly weren't tempered that way to take those leg kicks, he did not last, man. So great job by Robechki to figure out exactly what he needed to do to take this guy out. He took him out quick.
Yeah. This guy's going to be a problem for a lot of people. 15-fight win streak, super, super compact, tough. You know, very, very – at 155, he looked huge.
He looked huge.
Yeah, I was blown away that he could make 155. And this was he just not not even a close competition in this one. And even Radzabov, he missed weight. He wasn't even able to make weight for this. So he lost 20% of his purse to Mateus. And I'm looking forward to seeing him fight again. At 18-1, 15-fight win streak, look out, lightweight division. This guy's coming. Okay, the women's strawweight fight. I wasn't super loving the fight too much. Jillian Robertson just didn't seem to have it for some reason. I've seen her fight way better. She holds some records in that women's strawweight division, most submission wins ever, greatest. A lot of really good fights on her. She just wasn't there in this fight, and it was pretty boring. Tabitha was able to just grind out an easy win. I don't know what happened to Jillian. She just didn't seem to have it.
I thought what happened to her was Ricci's footwork was exemplary. Right. Couldn't catch her. And then her takedown defense was right on point. And whenever she did go down to the mat, she went down on her terms and never completely engaged in the guard. She never actually went into the guard. She was always up, got the takedown, right? And then she would stand up saying, I got the takedown, that's good, that's points on me. But she never literally engaged into like Robertson's guard to give her a chance. Yeah. Always was out of the guard. So I thought just that slight tweak to her plan was perfect. I thought it was a genius move on her camp's part to do that, to fight that way. Because then she was completely in control of the entirety of the fight. And Robertson, unfortunately, stand-up is not her game. And Ricci showed that.
Yeah, tough to see the Canadian lose. It said they only have three Canadian female fighters on a graphic, and I think that's wrong. I think I know at least four, but that's for here nor there. Okay, we saw a UFC debut from Joshua Juan fighting Zalgiris Zalmogulov. Great performance from Joshua Van. Great performance by Van. Nice UFC debut. Beat a tough guy in Zalmogulov and did it quite, quite handily, quite easy. I thought it was a split decision, but I saw Van definitely the better fighter in this one.
Yeah, because like Van's boxing and his boxing was super on point. Zhumagulov fights with a certain like chaotic energy, like he kind of wants to get you into that whirlwind of a fight that he does. So it was a lot of strikes, but I thought Van was very good at picking his spots, countering when he needed to, and then following up his jab with like excellent 1-2 combos. Yeah, definitely Van was the better technician in there when it came to the boxing. That's how he won this fight.
Yeah, he was. Zhumagulov was supposed to fight somebody else last week. It got canceled. Van stepped in. He's only 21 years old. And six straight wins, five in the regional circuit, now six with his UFC debut. Looking forward to seeing him. Okay, the lightweight battle between Chepe Marsikal and Trevor Peak. Not a fan of Peak. I think the guy does not deserve to be in the UFC yet. He is just a street fighter. One of those Southern guys that just seems like a dumb guy that's just a street fighter that somehow got a couple knockouts in a regional circuit, and now they're giving him a shot. His technical striking is ridiculous. I can't believe all the stupid punches that he was trying to throw. And this was a great debut by Chepe. Just said, okay, well, whatever this guy's throwing at me, I'm not going to let him land it because it's ridiculous, and I'm going to beat him up and get this win.
I'll say this. Peak was tough, and he had really no technical way of doing anything. That is the one thing that shocked me. I'm like, so he just kind of throws the technique out the door, and he just, like, he was throwing like uppercuts from here, bro, like all you can, like Street Fighter stuff. I'm like, I didn't know what I was looking at, but it was pretty clear to me that Marisol was far and away the better fighter.
Oh,
like,
man.
Like far and away. Like, it was just like, wow. Like, it's like, he's literally fighting the Street Fighter dude that's super tough, right? But, like, I'm an actual UFC fighter. I know how to fight. That's what it looked like. That's what it looked like to me. It was kind of ridiculous. But great, great fight by Marisol. But I will say this. At least Pete made the fight, like, super, like, entertaining, because you're just like, what is this?
Yeah, no, I hate it. I think, you know, I just think a guy has to be, you know, a professional league has to have guys that know how to fight, not throwing just absolute crazy bombs, you know, just swinging for the fences, hoping to land something. It's just, I think it degrades the, you know, the whole organization when you got guys like that on the roster. And, you know, I think Peak has a potential. I know he comes from a tough background, has a lot of, was a really good fighter, street fighter from all accounts, but, learn how to fight properly, learn some technique and come back when you're good. I kind of wish they would cut him and, you know, let him go back, get hungry on the regional circuit, learn how to fight better and come back. So we'll see. Quickly, Jack Jenkins, Jamal Emmers. I actually had Jamal Emmers winning this fight on my scorecards. I thought Jamal did better. I didn't like the decision. This was a 9th straight win for Jenkins, and he's tough. But I thought Jamal was the better fighter on the day, and had him winning 29-28 in my cards.
Oh, you did? Okay. Unfortunately, these were the last two that I wasn't able to see. Right. But did you think Emmers won because of the control that he had throughout the course of the fight? Because, yeah, like, did he actually control the fight? Was this a split decision or was it a unanimous decision?
It was a split. Yeah, it was a split decision. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so it was close. It was close.
Yeah. Yeah, it was too bad. I thought Emmers did enough to secure the win. This is the third straight win for Jenkins, 2-0 in the UFC. Really, you know, he put on a good show, but I just thought Emmers won two rounds and Jenkins won the one. The first fight of the night, this was another one where I kind of think Cody Brundage should retire. It looked like he wanted to. He was not listening to his coaches. They were screaming at him, and he didn't do anything different. He tried jumping on a guillotine choke on about three or four occasions. Soon as Dumas's head slipped out, he was on the bottom, never tried to get up. When the fight was done, he took his gloves off, and it looked like he was going to make an announcement. They didn't get the microphone anywhere near him, so he didn't. But I think he's done. I think he's done. This was his third straight loss. He just didn't put in any effort. And like I said, when he took the gloves off, I thought they were going to bring the microphone over. He was going to say he's done, place him in the cage, and see you later, go off into the sunset. But I haven't heard anything as of today. If he did, maybe he'll, you know, have some second thoughts about it. But this is a guy that just shouldn't have been there that day. He just didn't have it and didn't seem to even want to be there.
It sucks when you see that, right? Like when you see the fighter, and you, how about this? When you see the fight leave the fighter, when the fight is out of the fighter, because when that does happen, that's it. That's your cue to say exit stage right. Yep. You're done. You're done. Like as soon as that happens, and especially if you don't have it within you to listen to your coaches, those are the guys you actually pay. Yeah. You give them money so that you can be at your best. And if you're not going to listen to them, then what is the point of you being in the octagon? There is none.
Yeah. His coach is Mark Montoya, one of the best coaches in MMA. And, you know, he was just screaming at him, just yelling at him, just telling him, you know, do this for your family. He said, wake the F up maybe 10 times in the two times between the rounds, you know, just wake the F up, yelling at him. But it just didn't seem to change Brundage. I'm not sure why he was just listless and just didn't give any effort at all. And yeah, I think, he should either retire or, you know, the UFC do him a favor and cut him loose and save face. I don't know. It was tough to watch, and it was a crappy way to start the card. But there was a lot of good fights on the card, and all in all, I was happy with it. In the end.
Yeah. No, it was a good card. It was a good card. Like, how about this? The card for me, I think the main point was Topuria's coming out party, and then basically saying, this is who I am. I just took out the guy that just fought for the interim title belt, and I took him out easy.
Yeah.
Easy. So that put everybody else on notice in the featherweight division going, oh, okay, so that's a real one. Yeah, that's real.
I agree. Yeah, totally. It was his coming out party for sure. Okay, next week we've got an earlier card again, not as early as this past weekend, but earlier card. It's coming from Vegas. I think there's some boxing happening in Vegas late that night, so they don't want to be up against it. The main event has Sean Strickland against Abus Magomedov. Not sure what I expect. I think Magomedov will definitely be going for takedown. Strickland will try to keep it on the feet. We'll see if Strickland's able to hold off and get the KOs like he normally goes for. Styles make fights, so hopefully this is a good fight.
I agree with you on that. I think Magomedov is definitely going to try to take him down. And then looking even at like their win-loss records, it's super similar. Like it's almost the exact same.
Almost.
Yeah. So like I'm hoping that's going to be a very, very good fight.
Yeah. I do always look forward to seeing Max Griffin fight. He's on the card. We've got a Canadian, Benoit Saint-Denis there. And I don't have a lot of, we don't have a lot of time to break down the card. Always like seeing Kevin Lee. He's on the featured prelim fight. And I'm sure there's going to be some great battles waged that we can break down next week.
Yeah, definitely, man. I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing the co-main event. I think that'll be a good one with Grant Dawson and Demir Ismagulov. Love these names.
Yeah. That's why. Hey, that's another reason banning all the Russian fighters. We don't have to have such problems yelling out their names. Okay, one more UFC note. Ronda Rousey has been invited back to the UFC to try to save the featherweight division now that Amanda Nunes is done. I don't know if she's accepted it, but I heard they've put it out there trying to entice her back to have some more star power in the UFC.
Well, she better leave her fight camp. That leave that dude and learn how to like fight better, like, because that dude was actually your downfall. So if she does that, but you know what? I don't expect her to come back. No. Why would she?
Yeah,
she's done her thing. I would say that the fight game has now passed her by, and also too, I think she's making a ton of cash in the WWE. I don't think she needs to do none of that. She's good. Right.
Yeah. Okay, PFL quickly. Amazing card, incredible knockouts. Olivier Aubin-Mercier, the Canadian, unfortunately faced another Canadian in Anthony Romero that night. But Olivier ended up getting his eighth victory in the PFL, ended up securing a playoff spot, third round knockout there. And that was the main event. Co-main event, Sidibou Sy ended up getting one of the KOs of in history, a spinning wheel kick.
Saw that.
Victory. Did you see that one?
I saw that. I saw it on Instagram. It was awesome. It, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Edson Barboza on Terry Etto.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an amazing, amazing KO. He's been in the playoffs all five seasons of the PFL, and he won last year. $1 million prize. So he's definitely on his way. Hurricane Shane Burgos grounded out a decision. When he left for the evening, he headed home. He had found out that he had not made the PFL playoffs. And then he got a call the next day, Saturday. And they said that there was a fight that happened earlier in the night. And the two fighters were teammates, and they decided amongst each other that they weren't going to fight when they were in the cage. They were just going to just sort of
spar.
It wasn't even really sparring.
You got to be kidding me. What?
And their cornermen were all from the same camp, so they agreed not to give any suggestions throughout the fight. They did not yell any advice. They did not say anything between the rounds. They just gave the guy water and made sure he was. Yeah. And so the PFL ended up making an announcement over the weekend that both fighters have been suspended and they are no longer part of the PFL season. And Shane Burgos now has made the playoffs because the one guy got eliminated. It was ridiculous. It was just unbelievably ridiculous. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen. And I'm shocked that the camp would do this. I think the camp should have went to the PFL and said, hey, we're just not going to fight. Put us against somebody else. Figure out. But we're just not going to fight because it was a terrible display. And the PFL said, sorry, guys. You're being suspended and you're out. The guy's name is Nathan Schulte. He fought Raush Manifold, and they are American Top Team partners. And for some reason, American Top Team this came up with this idea and this plan, and it was bad. It was really, really, really bad.
If you don't want to fight your buddy, then don't fight your buddy. It's as simple as that. If they give you the offer sheet, don't sign it. Because Aljamain Sterling and Davishvili, those guys are boys. Guess what they do? We just don't fight each other.
Yeah, just don't sign the contract. Yeah,
don't sign the contract. Do
it. That would have been the smart way of going about it. And yeah,
that is ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Thursday on Fight Pass, there's the Fight Pass Invitational. It's the grappling event. Really looking forward to that. Really looking forward to the co-main event that has Glover Teixeira and Anthony Smith, two longtime veterans of the UFC. There's some pretty good money going there. I recommend it. Tough tomorrow night, Connor and Chandler. Chandler's 4-0. All the veterans have beat Connor's prospects, and Connor's getting pretty mad about it. And I expect a massive meltdown probably tomorrow or over the next couple of weeks. Connor is not happy that he's 0-4 so far in four battles.
Of course not. Like, how could you be happy? And possibly facing 0-5? Like, what if this actually happens for the season? He doesn't win any fights. He's completely blown out. Like, that that almost would be an indictment of, so what did you do with these guys? Did you actually teach them anything? Or did you just, like, kind of do your Connor thing and just didn't give a shit about these guys? Because that's what it's looking like right now.
Yeah, sure is. It definitely is looking like that. And, yeah, it's not going well. I'm enjoying it, but I definitely know he's not. So we'll see. Okay, I know we got to go. I just did want to mention free agency. Who's going to move? Who's the biggest name that's going to move to a new team? You know, is Damian Lillard gone? Is Draymond gone? Who's going to move? Who's going to just blow it up and shock us all? Who's changing teams?
Well, I thought maybe there was a chance of Damian Lillard, but we'll see what moves Portland does for him, because they're not moving Scoot. I don't think they're going to move Scoot, but they got to do something. And if somebody from that team, if they're trying to move desperately, would probably be Nurkic to somewhere else. Right. And if they have to package him with somebody, that somebody might be Anthony Simons, now that Scoot Henderson's there. Right. So that could be a potential. Draymond could potentially move. I think one of the ones that sounded pretty interesting to me, Sacramento Kings. Because the Kings kind of run a similar offense.
Yeah.
But they would actually have to offer an offer sheet that matches whatever Golden State's going to do. And Golden State's going to get him to $100 million for 3 years or whatever. I think that's what's going to happen. So, interesting stuff. Those are the two that I would look at the most. And then also, too, I believe Chris Middleton has opted out of his contract for this year. So, he's another one to look at as well.
Yeah. Well, Milwaukee's in trouble because Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez are both unrestricted free agents and, could leave. If they leave, that's going to really harm them, two of their top guys. Especially Brooke being such an amazing defensive guy as well as contributing. It's going to be interesting to see where Kyrie lands. If Kyrie signs with Dallas, he's allowed a 5-year, $273 million deal. If he signs elsewhere, he's only allowed $207 million for 4 years. So, big shave. So he probably stays in Dallas. I don't know if they offer him the max, but maybe so. No, me either. We'll be interested to see what happens with Russell Westbrook. See if he stays with the Clippers. Fred VanVleet and Jakob Poeltl out of Toronto. It'd be interesting. I know Fred VanVleet is very, very highly sought after. A lot of teams are probably dangling a lot of money at him. Sort of like Jalen Brunson last year, a similar type of thing. Caris LeVert, Bruce Brown, D'Angelo Russell, Jeremy Grant. A lot of guys looking for big money and probably on the move. It'll be crazy, crazy over the next coming weeks. And I thought it would be pretty slow once the NHL and NBA season was done, but they've got still a lot of things in the works. They got the trades, got the free agency, we got the draft. NHL awards are tonight, just kicking off right as we speak. And tell me your last thoughts on the NBA draft.
Last thoughts on NBA draft. First off, I thought Wembanyama going to the Spurs, he couldn't have landed in a more perfect spot for him, because they develop big men like nobody's business, because they've had David Robinson, they've had Tim Duncan, and now they have Victor Wembanyama. The one thing I did hear about him that I thought was interesting is that his team and his team of professionals that take care of his body, they don't actually want him to bulk up too much.
Okay.
They believe that him bulking up too much would put too much load on his joints and his body at 7'5". Wow. And I thought to myself, that is a different sort of ideology that I haven't heard of before.
Yeah.
And so now I'm kind of curious to see how it's going to pan out for him. Because right now, as it stands, if he's going to go into the postseason, he's going to be bullied. Because, like, he has no base to him, really. So I'm curious to see how that works out for him. And I think Scoot Henderson has the potential to be like super athletic, explosive, like Russell Westbrook, Ja Morant. I'm looking forward to see just how great he can be. I know he's going to have to work on his shooting because his shooting's not quite there. And hopefully Miller's not a bust for the Charlotte Hornets, because looking back at the time where Jordan's been the owner, they've only landed two really good players. Kemba Walker, LaMelo Ball. Wow. That's it. I'm hoping that Miller pans out for them. And by the looks of it, he should, because he's exactly what they need, which is a shooter.
Yeah. Have you ever had a suit like any of those guys displayed?
Oh, yes, of course. My man, I think it's Grady Dick, pick 13th. Can't even remember the name. But he had the best blazer I've ever seen. Looked like straight out of the 80s with like the sequin red. I was just like, man, he rocked it well. He looked good. Like, I was kind of surprised. I was shocked. I was like, man looks good. Man looks good. And I believe he's played for Kansas, and he's the shooter.
Yeah. Yeah, big going to Toronto. Yeah, going to the Raptors. I saw him at the Blue Jays game yesterday. He was already wrapped in a Blue Jays jersey there, cheering on hometown team. And, yeah, it was pretty wild.
He wasn't wearing the blazer.
Yeah. No, he wasn't wearing the blazer. Just the Blue Jays, yeah. Scoot Henderson was that guy's crazy outfit, crazy suit that he had on.
He had a good one on. He had a really good one on, actually, too.
These guys have to have some money already, hey? Yeah, to be able to have that kind of those kind of jewels and this kind of suits and stuff. They must be getting money now in college a little bit.
Well, okay, so for college, I believe now it works that you do get something from the merchandising. They can't just, like, the colleges can't just be like, hey, man, I know we can't, because it's almost as if it's like, I know you're starving because you're a student, but thank you for the tens of billions of dollars you've given to the school. Thanks a lot, buddy. So I think that's at least now that's been taken care of. That's different. And then with Scoot, since he came from the Ignite League, I think he was getting paid like $500,000 anyway. So, yeah, he got money.
Unreal. Yeah, with the G League Ignite. Yeah, true. I guess he was having money there, yeah. Okay, man, this was fun. Did you hear that Ryan Reynolds, Michael B. Jordan, and Rob McElhenney have bought into one of the F1 teams, the Alpine team in F1? Michael B. Jordan, Ryan Reynolds, and Rob McElhenney. They bought the Wrexham soccer team a couple of years ago, were able to put it on TV and just generate a ton of buzz about it, bring a lot of more money and a lot of more notoriety. Now they bought into an F1 team, and this is it. I think they're going to probably do the same with this F1 team.
That's awesome, first off. And also, too, it seems that if you're going to follow – anybody around from Hollywood and make money with, Ryan Reynolds seems to be the best bet at this point in time. Like, he seems to be ultimately the best bet. Rob McElhenney or whatever his name, that guy, smart dude. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to hitch my wagon to him. So whatever Ryan does now, I'm going to do. Yeah. I'm just going to do it. And then Michael B. Jordan's like, wait, how much money are you guys making? I'm in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, well, enjoy this free agent frenzy as it kicks in. Happy Canada Day. Happy early Canada Day coming this Saturday. Hope you have a great week ahead. And, keep in touch. Love to see you soon. We'll have to get together for a couple beers and a bite to eat.
Yeah, definitely, man. We'll try to get the guys together again and do what we did last time. That's a great idea. So enjoy your evening, my friend.
Thank you so much. You too. Cheers. Bye. Bye for now. Good night. Okay. Another edition of Complete Sports Media's podcast has come to a close. Well, we got to cover a lot of great things. I'm about to turn on the NHL awards. Some of the awards are, you know, it's a no-brainer. Connor McDavid MVP, I think he's got that wrapped up. Some of those awards, we don't even have to bother watching, but it'll be nice to see all the guys dressed up and put together. The NBA does it so different. spreads out the awards through the playoffs. They wait, these guys, the NHL waits till the end of the playoffs before they hand out the hardware. So be great for a lot of guys to recognize dreams. And I'm really looking forward to free agency frenzy starting on Canada Day. I can't believe all the guys that are available right now. Off the Leafs, Ryan O'Reilly and Michael Bunting, Patrick Kane from the Rangers, Dmitry Orlov from Boston, Matt Dumba from Minnesota, Vladimir Tarasenko, Patrice Bergeron. I don't know if he's sticking around, but Boston doesn't want to lose him. Alex Killorn, Bertuzzi. There was a trade today, Taylor Hall and Nick Foligno to the Hawks, all ready to play with Connor Bedard. Just gave up a couple of D prospects, Ian Mitchell and Alec Regula. I think there's some other big trades on the go. Tony D'Angelo trades possibility here. It's being held up a little bit. But anyway, have a great week ahead. Enjoy the beautiful weather. Enjoy the long weekend coming up, Canada Day. And then just right around the corner from Independence Day, July 4th. And we will see you soon. Thanks so much for all your support. Go check out our website and Instagram and all of that. I appreciate how much we're growing, and it's all thanks to you guys. And couldn't do it without you. Thanks a lot. Tell your friends, tell your family, and check out our website. Give us some feedback. Love to hear back from you. So take care of yourself. Have a very great week ahead. Bye for now.